Welcome to New Persuasive Words, a podcast of hope-seeking understanding. Join Scott Jones and Bill Bohr for an ongoing conversation about theology, culture, and politics. Funny, contentious, outrageous, there's something for everyone. And now, your hosts.
Welcome back to New Persuasive Words. I'm Scott Jones.
And I'm Bill Bohr.
Back saddle again, Bill.
It is a... It is a big welcome back, right? It's been a long while. When was our last episode? I don't even remember.
Our last episode was something like over a year. It's well over a year ago.
More than that.
I think 2022, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so a lot has happened. A lot of water under the bridge.
Water under, over, through.
Through, right. So this is... this is our New Beginnings podcast. So
it's a new beginning for us. It might be a new beginning for the country.
Well, no, it's the end of the country, but more or less.
don't sugarcoat it. I mean, really.
No, things have not gotten better since you and I have stopped having these conversations. I do think we kind of need to catch up. So I think, lots of changes. I am now I'm podcasting from the beautiful state of Vermont. It's dark, but the Green Mountains are in front of me. Was I married when we were last podcast?
I don't think so.
No. So I'm married to a wonderful woman, and I'm the pastor of the First Congregational Church in Manchester, Vermont. And Shabbat Shalom, everyone, as well. We just came back from synagogue. So my wife is Jewish. So we are members of both First Congregational Church, Manchester, and Israel congregation here. And so life is interesting and good.
Where do you pay more dues? Who has the higher dues?
We actually, they were honored that we were part of the congregation. So they had extended us a lovely discount, but we paid dues anyway. But I think we're trying to go 50-50. So we're trying to be equally even. Equally even, there's a redundancy. No, we're trying to be fair. So I guess we'll just leave it at that.
So I am currently podcasting from Philadelphia, and I am available. I think at one time we were podcasting, I was not available, and you were.
No.
Ladies, if you're listening, if you've got low standards and you're not looking for return phone calls or the truth, I'm very available. Just kidding. So here we are. We're podcasting, and we are... I think this is actually episode something like 296.
So we've been on an extended hiatus. Periodically, some of you have said we miss you. I appreciate that. All three of you who have missed us, we appreciate that.
Our Cash App is open. If you miss us, show us. Talk is cheap. But,
yeah. So it's interesting. So this is, we are in... The Days of Wonder here for our in the Jewish High Holidays, and it is a time of repentance. It's a time of reflection, a time of new beginnings. Right? there was really a powerful. I listened to a podcast from the Shalom Hartman Institute, and Danielle Hartman, who's the president, talked about the beauty of Rosh Hashanah is that you can be different. Things can be different. This year can be different. We can leave behind things. And I think that's a powerful idea. It really is.
I think that's a powerful idea. Will we leave behind Donald Trump, Bill? Will the country leave behind Donald Trump? He just had a massive, major interview. He did a full over an hour with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press.
Yeah, right. Another argument against the major network news outlets. Yeah, that was not her best work. And I think I like her. She's sharp, but not that. No, I think, we will resolve Donald Trump like we resolved the legacy of slavery, like the genocide of Native people, like the overthrowing of Central American democracies. No, yeah, we will live into our legacy with Donald Trump just like we've done other things as well, and how we left Iraq and and Afghanistan as well. So we have we will continue to reap the benefits of what has happened to the party of Lincoln. Matter of fact, I think it's even I don't think there's anything that's an abomination when it comes to country, because it's not holy, but it comes pretty close when we talk about the Republican Party as the party of Lincoln, which is really interesting. I was officially installed this last weekend, so now I have standing in the UCC, which I don't know how many.
Wow.
I don't know how many. I'm not sure how many denominations that puts me at right now. I am a walking ecumenical movement, but you know, I had my good friend Mark Boyd, who was a student of mine at Palmer and then a staff person with me at Media Presbyterian, and now a very fine Presbyterian minister. And we were trying to explain to my wife why both our families were Republicans in West Virginia. Mark's from the southern part of West Virginia, and his ancestors were those Scotch-Irish. Mine were the Germans who got here before his did, and were trying to hide. we were hiding up in the northern part of West Virginia. But in West Virginia, my family and his family were Republicans because it was the party of Lincoln, the party that is why West Virginia succeeded from Virginia. To be a Republican in West Virginia meant you were not part of the KKK. Really, that's literally, I mean, that's kind of how my grandfather explained it. So it's a very different Republican Party than my grandfather, of blessed memory, my grandfather Bohr one time said, yeah, we Bohrs, we pretty much have been Republicans back to the time of Jesus. To this day, I'm not sure if he was kidding or not, but I hope he was kidding.
But you think, right? You say that you know, slavery, you put Trump in Native American genocides and stuff, which is, you know, I take it that's slightly hyperbolic, but look, half.
No, I'm just saying we don't go. We're not necessarily better. I'm just saying we don't get over things in this country.
But I mean, half the country is a Trump supporter. I mean, you know.
Yeah, half the country does not believe in the Constitution.
But do you really think that half the country, yes, doesn't believe in the Constitution?
So, yeah, I do. Mitt Romney seemed to imply that the other day. He said there's a strong majority of his party that does not believe in the Constitution. That's from Mitt Romney. That's not from Bill Bohr.
Well, I mean, this is the irony of ironies that Bill Bohr is quoting Mitt Romney. I mean,
I actually, you know what? I don't dislike Mitt Romney. I never did dislike him.
But I mean, I just think that's, when we say they don't believe in the Constitution, like, let's parse that out. When you're saying that half the country doesn't believe in the Constitution, what do we actually mean? That they don't believe in term limits for the president, that they don't believe in separation of powers, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it actually means several of those things. First of all, I think it's, you know, you and I have talked about this in previous podcasts. It's a problem of late democracies, right? It ceases to be a long time ago for many people, it ceased to be about any kind of core constitutional ideas. And I loved, remember, I missed the Tea Party. Remember the Tea Party folks who used to carry around a copy of the Constitution in their pocket? I don't think any of them read it, but at least it was something sacred to them. But I think the transition of power, I think people were more than willing to, because of their allegiance to a person. And I think the irrationality of allegiance to Donald Trump, not that, you know, rationality has anything to do with politics. I just think it's almost a test case. I mean, it almost, it's as if Plato is around painting it for us, because I think this allegiance to a personality who embodies so many things that's contrary to people, to some of his core supporters' values, to me is embolic of the fact that it's not no longer about the rule of law. It's about an ideology associated with a personality or projected on a personality. I mean, it could have been somebody other than Donald Trump. I think he was just the wrong guy at the right time, but I think that has nothing to do with the rule of law. there are legions of people who are committed to Donald Trump uncritically. It has nothing to do with any kind of constitutional ideals. Do you disagree with that?
Well, do I disagree with that? I think that,
because it's certainly not about conservatism.
No.
And allegiance to Donald. No, it's not about.
No.
It's not about the old liberal conservative thing. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I look across the Republican Party, and I see a group of people. I see like your libertarians who are sort of small government, don't tread on me. I see a group of sort of Christian nationalists who are sort of the revisionists. Hey, let's take America back to its glory days, which are, you know, these are overlapping with the MAGA. It's some of these folks are not MAGA people. I mean, I would look at someone like maybe Tim Scott. I mean, there are certain people I think would fit a Christian nationalist frame that would. And then I think you've got your old school, like what Bill Maher would call the Republican classic, which is maybe like your Nikki Haley, which are echoing back to a Gerald Ford, George Bush, sort of different sort of party.
Kind of, right. But if you're a Christian nationalist, the Constitution is not the foundation of what you believe in.
Right. You want a sort of Protestant ethnostate.
Yeah,
Tucker Carlson. I read a fascinating article
which would have mortified both Madison and Jefferson, right?
Yeah, I read it. I read a piece today that was from Michael Wolff. It was an excerpt of his forthcoming book on Fox, and it was talking about this. It was in the New York Magazine, The Intelligencer, and he was talking about Tucker Carlson and how, you know, Rupert Murdoch is not a Trump fan and was hoping that the network would not go pro-Trump. And it kind of did. It just sort of was the way the network evolved. And he said Tucker would say to people, look, I'm not anti-Semitic and I'm not anti-black. That's totally misunderstanding me. But I am anti-Catholic. So Tucker is this interesting sort of...
Did you see where the Attorney General got grilled, being accused that there's a secret anti-Catholic movement among the FBI and the Justice Department? Did you see that question?
No.
McGarland got asked that when he was being the joke of the conversation that the under representative Jim Jordan, who looks like a Nazi. I mean, he looks like he could be a stormtrooper. He certainly looks like a wrestling coach that looked the other way while people were being molested. He's got that look all over him. But he also looks
I don't
like
look
could,
at him and I first of all, I don't know what a wrestling coach that looks the other way looks like. Nor do
that was it, I, look Jim Jordan. It's Jim Jordan. There it is.
Now I do know what I think. What a Nazi looks like. I think, and I don't know that I think
he's got some Aryan thing. Looks like I think he wouldn't take long. I think he would look good in a brown.
He
shirt.
Would need a different haircut. That's not. He doesn't have a Nazi haircut. That's for sure.
No, and he would have to dress better. He would have to be a little more. Now that you think of it, he could be like a Nazi when they're like doing street fighting in Munich. You know, like in he could do that like in the '20s. But now he couldn't. He doesn't have SS. You're right. He's not SS material. I retract my Nazi comment about Jim Jordan. Strike that from the record.
There you go. I will strike that from the record. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think first off, if you ask most Americans how passionate they are about the Constitution, regardless of political spectrum, that's not a massive crowd, right? I mean,
I agree. I think this has been a long time coming. You and I've said before, Trump is a symptom. If it wasn't him, it'd be somebody else. I totally think that. It's kind of the natural course of events and there's all kinds of places to blame, but I think there's just, you know, you could, it's kind of like even Tom Brady eventually came to an end, right? There's a certain kind of natural end to things in the material world, and certainly institutions and empires play out. Now that we could, you know, again, let's take the Roman Empire for instance. It looked like it was over in the third century, and it regrouped and had, you know, another couple hundred years. So I'm not. It doesn't have to be an imminent demise, but and again, I don't have this idealistic idea, a belief in a glory days. I mean, I think, gosh, I mean, if you do a deep dive to what Congress looked like in the 1920s, that's terrifying. What was going on in this country in the 1850s? We had like three of the worst presidents, you know, strung together at a very unfortunate time. So it's not like we have had these exceptional people and that we've been well served by our politicians in the past. Now, I don't believe in any idyllic stage, but I think in my lifetime, they're probably the least amount of statesmen that we've ever had in Congress. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, so I benefited from being, as you know, the end of the baby boom, people who are very different, you know, ideologically, but who had, many of them had, you know, risked their lives in World War II. Many of them came back with scars from that conflict. And, you know, still remembered people coming together for common things. So I think, you know, you had people who changed. I mean, even speaking of West Virginia, Robert Byrd, who had been a member of the KKK, you know, tried to filibustered the Great Society and the Civil Rights Bill. You know, at the end of his life, was an advocate for social justice. Now, whether that was expediency or conviction, I don't know. But it was, yeah, there were people who were bipartisan, who would fight. I mean, they were very partisan in many ways, but they would come together. I mean, we couldn't even pass a military spending bill this week in Congress. I mean, that's pretty bad. When they can't even pass a bill that's spending too much money on our military, you know, things have gotten different. Things have certainly changed.
Well, maybe that's the answer to the militarization of the country is gridlock.
Yeah, let the Republicans be. That's again, I'm older than you. These paradigm shifts, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around, that the Republicans are preventing military officers from getting promotions and refusing to pass the military spending bill. Yeah, that was a quick shift. That change happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, I want to go back to the constitutional thing. I think what do you think does motivate? So right now, half the country is not just semi-enthusiastic about the prospect of Trump being the Republican nominee. I mean, this is, what is it, 46 well, point lead, or like, what is Trump's
all right, well,
lead
that's,
right
that's
now?
Let's that's say half the country. Well, now, Biden was ahead in today's poll. But when you say, we're talking about not half the country, we're talking about half of the people who say they have a voting preference. Is that what, because what percent, I mean, what number are we talking about? So we're talking about, what did you say, how many million, 40 million?
How many people vote? I don't know. I don't know what the vote.
Yeah, I don't know. So we're not talking about majority of the country. But we're talking about a near majority of people who say they're going to vote.
Right.
Yeah, because part of the problem are the disinterested. I don't know what percentage is disinterested, but that's a problem. And but that's been a problem my entire life. So, but yeah, no, there is a millions of people who either don't believe that Trump was behind an insurrection or don't care that Trump was behind an insurrection. So there's a lot of people out there.
I mean, in Trump's own words, I mean, look, a lot of these people, they didn't even like go in the building and they're like being thrown in jail. Like they weren't even like in the building. That was his answer to the.
Here's an interesting question: what if he's convicted of the felony? What if he's convicted of insurrection?
I think that won't make a difference. I think.
I mean, but what happened? I mean, if he's convicted, what happens to him?
I guess you would have to. So to put his former president in jail would be very difficult. I think you'd still have to have Secret Service protection and all that stuff. So. I mean, I would think they would put him on a military base or something, like some sort of federal, Like, I don't think you can put him in general population, right? You'd have to
put him in, send him to Cuba. That would be good.
Could send him down with Jack Nicholson. You want me on that. Like, Danny, show me some courtesy. Yeah, I mean, you could send him down to Gitmo.
Yeah, that would be poetic. Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? I mean, joking aside,
the system is not designed for this.
Right, but this is actually one of those, this is the ultimate test of the system, right? Is anybody above the law? Is the president above the law?
I think the question isn't at this point whether he's above the law or not. It's how do you, I mean, it is a complicated thing. What do you do with a former president who has a walking security concern, right? I mean, there's a reason we have these people with Secret Service protection their whole lives. They know all sorts of things. They could be kidnapped. They could be, you know.
Well, don't you? I think he's right. He's like a sieve. Come on. That's right. I mean, I think he needs to take a Russian plane ride.
Yeah, right. I mean, if Trump were, yeah, that's the thing. All right, let me show you. Look, it's on the bed. Look, this is like top secret stuff. I'll show you.
Right now, I mean, it's like, it is. I've only read part of Milley, this article about Milley, but General Milley, but the fact that I mean we're not talking about left wing woke people here, who have said he was the least qualified person to be a leader of human beings. These are the top brass of the military. Every military person worked with him. So anyway, except for what's his name, who's the traitor? What's the traitor? The guy who's now going around doing Christian nationalism stuff, who was a Russian agent. He was going to be national security advisor and was a Russian agent.
The general. With the short hair. Oh gosh, I can't believe I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
He had issues with Turkey too. And
yeah, Benedict Arnold. Just call him Benedict Arnold, right?
Yeah. Who was that guy?
I lost his name. I could see him too. Yeah, I can see him. Here, that's why, fortunately, Al Gore invented the internet here. I can look it up.
You can, exactly.
Yeah. Gosh. I mean, he's going to be the national security advisor.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, did you see that it came out that this ProPublica piece that Clarence Thomas was secretly participating in Coke donor network events?
Oh, that totally doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that says he vacations in Walmart parking lots.
Right.
Well, I don't know where these Walmarts are, but they must be in some pretty toney neighborhoods.
Yeah. Flynn, General
Michael Flynn. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know, though, what to do, because I think I have a tough time. I try to... I mean, we're in a two-party system, right? So on some level, you are resigned if you're a partisan. You wind up voting, I think, for the people that, you often get less than desirable choices.
Right. You know, and I've always, I mean, you know, I remember particularly when I was a younger man, I always romanticized about the parliamentary system, but having spent the last, almost 20 years deeply following Israeli politics, I mean, you know, there's a lot of problems, right? Well, you know, it's a problem of democracy, right? It's not, regardless of what form it's in. I mean, look at how many countries, you know, the Eastern European countries are electing right-wing governments, right? And they're duly elected. I can't remember. Who was the prime minister of England, of Great Britain, after World War One?
It wasn't Disraeli, right? Was it
Disraeli? It wasn't Lord George. He was the foreign minister. But when Wilson was saying making the world safe for democracy, and one of the British said, our job is to make the world safe from democracy. And you can, I mean, and again, I mean, I think we don't, this is a, I mean, obviously we don't know a lot of history, but what happened in Europe following World War One? Democracy was a disaster, and the violence, and it was a violent failure. And again, I, again, I'm not advocating. No, I'm not. I'm a pro. I'm pro democracy, but it
very radical it is, stand.
Yeah, but right. Well, it is, I think, but it's a very flawed system, and it tends to fall short in many, many ways. It does not always give us the best that we should have. Still think it's better for the alternatives, but it's, and I think we're certainly in that season here in this country.
Well, I think also one of the things, I was talking with a friend today who is a resident of the UK, and he was actually in Belfast, speaking in Belfast, where I've never been, but he says it's a lovely little town.
It is a lovely town.
And he was saying that, we were talking about parliamentary democracies, and one of the things that they do prevent is you would not get a Donald Trump you would not get an outsider, right or left, that would just come in and sweep the country. But those people would have to start off, you're almost more like the Mitch McConnell types, right? These are the people that wind up to ascendancy in parliamentary democracies are people that put time into the party and the system. And there is a weeding out process that kind of system provides.
It does, but you can't end up with a Boris Johnson or a Netanyahu in those systems.
I'm not saying you don't wind up with people that are not,
right,
that you might right. find undesirable, but they're not, but they've at least paid their dues, right?
They've paid their dues, and also they're accountable to a party.
Right.
Right. I mean, in other words, I think, and it might out, I mean, Israel might actually work out this way, where you get Likud, some, I mean, members of Likud who leave Netanyahu behind. So there is opportunities for kind of midstream correctives, right? You can get no confidence votes, right?
Right, right. There's a count. You can, yeah, you can call snap elections. You can get no confidence
votes. Well, the other thing, too, is, and you get women in leadership more readily. I mean, it's, you know, India has had a woman leader way before. You know, we haven't had that yet. We have not had a woman head of state in India, Israel, Germany. You know, you can go through and list them. Pakistan, right? Pakistan has a woman. Pakistan and India have had women head of states before the United States. Didn't end well. But I'm just
and
saying,
even if you don't like, even yeah. if you find someone like Netanyahu objectionable, he's not. You wouldn't say he's unqualified for the office. I mean, you could say you don't like the way he carries on in the office.
No, absolutely. No.
But he's at a level, a caliber.
Exactly.
He's not someone that with no experience that, right. you know, is a complete outsider. That then, what I think is also kind of, you know, is unique about our system is then the massive administrative branch that is then staffed by the executive. So, I mean, you really...
Right.
I mean, that's something the founders, I think, didn't envision, right? They didn't envision that the executive branch would be as wildly large as it is. And I mean, if you really want power in D.C., you don't want to be in Congress. You want to be a department head. I mean, that's...
Well, apparently, or apparently maybe a Supreme Court judge for life right now.
Or a Supreme Court justice, right? This is black is right. very slimming as a color.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too. Do you remember your Thomas Aquinas, what Thomas Aquinas' ideal government probably was?
I can think of what Aristotle's was, but I don't know. And it would shock me if it wasn't as similar as Aristotle.
Sure. Remind me of Aristotle.
Aristotle would be sort of like, not unlike what the Founding Fathers had, like magistrates that were... there would be a democracy. Not everybody would vote, of course. And you would have sort of the best. He liked middle class voting because he thought that people among the middle class would be the people that would be best suited to choose the leadership. But he wanted sort of he wouldn't want a king. He wanted a sort of he wanted folks that were elected by, and he also wanted the middle class to have arms. He thought it was very important for the middle class to be armed.
Well, so Aquinas talked about that there'd be merit. He goes through all the government. Yeah, he's very precise and thorough, as you
expect.
This is
like what Aristotle does. He goes through all
Aquinas was a constitutional monarchy. He thought that would be, you know, so basically I guess what England tried to do, let's say England under Charles I, that's not a good one, but let's say maybe England under James I or England under Elizabeth, even though they weren't Catholic, might be the ideal state where there was a strong parliament, and basically the monarch was a constitutional monarchy, so he was not above the law. He was, as the men of Kent said, the king makes a vow to uphold the laws of the realm. But that was Aquinas's idea. So I think you could say it is kind of a modified executive legislature. But and Aristotle was a little more optimistic about the population than Plato was. Right? Plato was pretty much an elitist, if I remember right. Now. I can't hear you. Are you talking? I lost you. Can you hear me? I can't hear you.
Sorry, I was muted. This is my Clubhouse practice. When you don't talk, you mute yourself. So it's like I'm used to being on Clubhouse. I was muting myself. Yeah, so I'm just re-looking at some Aristotle here, and he's, he thought monarchy was the lower form in the sense of it could corrupt easily into tyranny. Then you have a constitutional monarchy, he thought would be better. And then constitutional democracy, which he called a polity, where you would have the best qualified citizens rule with the consent of all.
So it looks like, Thomas, obviously, maybe the greatest student of Aristotle.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely the greatest student of Aristotle. Plato, when you're tired of the people, that's when you read Plato.
Right.
You might be in a Platonic mood these days, Bill.
I do agree that Aquinas brought Augustine back to the ground. I mean, he was an Augustinian who rescued Augustine or rescued Augustinianism. So, yeah, gosh, I haven't read. This is shaking off the dust here. That's good. So, all right. Well, we've probably talked long enough here.
30 minutes. We've talked for 30 minutes. So we're back.
So what's the it's interesting. We haven't talked for a long time, and yet.
We're back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle, but I'm not sure things have gotten better. But we shall see, right? The whole issue is still in the balance, right? Yeah, I think we should end with a word of hope. And for me, again, in some level, it just doesn't matter. I mean, it matters.
That's hopeful. Look, here's the word of hope. It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Well, I mean, the interesting thing is. I'm preaching through Philippians this fall.
Very positive book.
Great book. And Paul's like, okay, it feels like, and if it's, we don't know which prison he's in because he got thrown in a couple of times. But if it's the Roman imprisonment, it's obvious it's one of his last letters. And frankly, there wasn't that much time between the first one and the last one anyway. But this idea that he had this kind of amazing detachment, in other words, he had gotten to a point in his life. A contentious guy, right? And had, his whole life was one of conflict. Before he was a Christian, he was conflicted with the new, with the new movement, and his entire Christian ministry was in conflict with someone. If it wasn't Judaizers, it was people within, his own churches or other Christians who disagreed with him. And yet at the end, he kind of has this peace, in other words, I'm for the good that happens. If regardless of why things are preached, I'm glad it's being preached. And I think also the sense, to live is Christ, to die is gain. And I do think as the church, the church has had to navigate a lot of things, and a lot of American Christianity is imploding on itself. And I think we have an opportunity to kind of regroup and try to be salt and light again. And I think I'm in Vermont, right? Which is not the most church going place. Matter of fact, it's the second worst church going place in the country. So we're just ahead of the curve of everybody leaving church. But I just find people are hungry. People want to be about something bigger than what's going on around them.
Hey, there's no better time to do outreach than when the barbarians are at the gates.
Barbarians are at the gate. Well, you know, I mean, Augustine died pretty sure that everything temporally he had built was about to be destroyed. He knew that. And yet, look what happened.
And really, what was there after Augustine? Maybe he was right, really. I mean, we did have the iPhone, the Caddyshack films, or at least the first one.
Right. So, but I think this is for such a time as this, right?
All right.
That's why we're here.
There we are.
We're back.
All right. We're back.
All right. Peace, man.
How about that episode of New Persuasive Words? Thanks so much for joining Scott and Bill. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and will join us next time. Till then, thanks for listening and God bless.